recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Use math to make the world a better place. Become an actuary through the Society of Actuaries and find solutions to the world's most pressing challenges. As an actuary, the only thing higher than the pay is the satisfaction.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time Match Day. My name's Taylor Payne and Newcastle are back in Premier League action against Eddie Howe's bogeyest of bogey teams. That's right, it's Bournemouth at home. George Colgan and Chris Woff are watching on, but first, let's hear some action.
Krupe now, there's big space in the middle of the pitch for Krupe. Turns well, creates things, scores goals anyway. Here's Ryan on the outside of Hall, rolls it across into the six-yard box, and it's touched in by Marcus Tavernier for the opener. Ryan attacking down the right, got away from Hall, and a ball just rolled in front of goal that's been turned into the net by Tavernier. Further disappointment. 32 minutes, Newcastle United 0, AFC Bournemouth 1.
It's a quick throw, 15 seconds of the 2 minutes remaining. Now back to Miley and Botman. Ramsdale at the edge of the area, but they go square instead to Chow, up towards Livramento, near to halfway. He's come inside and found Miley. Last chance to attack in this first half. Miley's ball, though, is in between Elanga and Osula. And the half-time whistle is greeted by boos from some Newcastle fans here at St James's Park. Gone back to the goalkeeper again. Bruno. Trying to bring it through the middle, and Osula trying to get away and behind. Osula is in, Barnes is with him. Osula finishes the opportunity, and Newcastle United think they're level, but they're not, because the offside flag is up. The flag is up on the near side. Osula's goal has been disallowed. VAR's having a look. Osula, was he offside? At St James's Park, with Bournemouth leading 1-0. This is massive. They want the goal to be given.
I think what they're saying is it was played back by a Bournemouth player. If it was played back by a Bournemouth player, he's onside.
It looks like it was. It looks like it came off Evan Nielsen's left boot, doesn't it? And therefore,
he's not offside.
He would be onside.
There is clear evidence that Bournemouth number 9 played for more forward.
It's a goal. They have it on halfway. On this near side, Truffert to Tavernier. Brooks inside to Truffert, who's made the run, and now into the penalty area on the outside with a ball to Tavernier. Hangs up the cross, Evan Nielsen's header, Truffert's put it in. Truffert from left back helped to create the goal that he has just scored, and
It's another damaging one for Newcastle United. Level through the Osula goal after the VAR check, but now behind again. And
there's no more time.
Newcastle United are beaten again, and it's Eddie Howe's former club that have inflicted this latest reverse.
Welcome to the Mausoleum, aka St. James's Park. How are you, Chris, after yet another wonderful day at the office? I was going to say another bad day at the office, but it was actually just a day at the office, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, in some ways, if you try and look at this positively, Newcastle didn't throw away a lead. So they lost 2-1, but they weren't leading 1-0. So, you know, in some ways, is that a sign of progress? I'm not really sure.
Well, that is the third 2-1 defeat in a row, I believe. So, again, I'll just come back to another bad day at the office, just a day at the office, just an all day at the office. Right, we're going to start at the very end, just to shake things up a little bit. If Newcastle United can't do that, then we certainly can. I went into the mix zone afterwards with the expectation that nobody would come out, but Kieran Trippier did come out. I thought that was kind of quite impressive from him, really. He didn't start the match. He came on at half-time. It was his decision to come on front up afterwards. By the way, I'm told that he offered to do the same thing at Crystal Palace last week, where he didn't play at all. That is the kind of character that Newcastle are going to be losing this summer. And I started off by asking him that. Was this just him attempting to take responsibility?
Of course. I'm a senior player. I'm one of the, you know, experienced players in the dressing room. I feel like I have the responsibility to stand here. Yeah, and take the criticism I'll take on my shoulders. Fire away.
Can you put your finger on what isn't going right for the team at the moment?
Yeah, it's tough. Especially at home, since I've been at the club, we've been a real force. We've been tough to beat, we've been feared. I just feel like we've come away from that a little bit. I don't know why. Like I said, I'm not going to stand there and make excuses. You know, we've conceded too many goals late on, and it's us players who need to take responsibility, nobody else.
It's distressing, or it's sad to feel that this is a stadium that has tension in it, that it feels like a bit of a stadium on a knife edge, and of course that then almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Do you feel that as players at the moment, that it's an edgy place?
I've been in this position many times in my career. I understand the frustration, of course I do. It's not nice getting beat at home. The supporters are angry, frustrated, and they've got every right to be, because we've just not been quite there this season. Like I said, we've conceded late goals so many times this season, so that's why I take full responsibility. That's why I'm stood here. I'll front up, I'll own up, and we've got another huge game next week. We've got 5 more games, and we need to start picking up wins and fast.
Is it an angry dressing room?
Angry, you know, it's just disappointed, frustrated. Just the way we're conceding goals, and it's our responsibility, it's our problem, the players, nobody else. We need to take full responsibility, myself included. And yeah, like I said, we've got to handle the pressure, we've got to take the criticism, and we need to put the negative into a positive.
And I think I know what your answer will be to this. And you know, Eddie has been a formational manager for this football club. What he's done has been incredible. You talked post Brentford and took responsibilities as players post Brentford. Is this still a team that's playing for the manager?
100%. Now, I'm not going to stand here and criticise the manager. I've known him too long. I know what he does behind the scenes. Like I said before, it's us players who need to take responsibility. You know, the manager's given us clear instructions individually and as a team what to do. So I'm not going to stand here and accuse the manager. It's nothing to do with him. He's given us clear instructions, so it's us players who need to step up and execute his plan. I'm not going to blame the manager whatsoever.
Yeah, I thought it was important to hear from the dressing room. There, obviously, a lot of taking of responsibility, trying to show that this was all about the players and nobody else. But of course, I had to ask that question about how, at the end, it's the manager that takes responsibility ultimately for results and bad performances. You were in the head coach's press conference afterwards, Chris, and there was one moment really that felt like it stood out.
Yeah, I've never really been in a press conference where someone has taken, and we've timed it, it was about 7 seconds of a pause, which included within it an when Howe was asked about how in his pre-match press conference that he was asked about whether the fire still burned, and he gave a really strong response, which he really took the analogy too far, and when he started talking about the wood being stacked up ready to be put on the fire is how he ended his answer. But it was sort of...
Feels like it may still be stacked up.
Yeah, not exactly quite. So he gave a strong response in that regard, but he was asked then after this game, not necessarily to conflate issues, but I do think part of the reason why I was asked is that Anthony Gordon was unavailable for this match, and there's been a lot of speculation regarding his future and whether he wants to be here this summer, whether other players want to be here this summer, given that Newcastle may look to sell players heading in to the summer. The official reason was they had a hip injury. Howe pushed back on the idea that he'd missed out due to lack of commitment, but he was directly asked, coming back to the point about Sophia Stillburn, he was asked, you made it clear the fire burns for you, but do you believe the fire still burns among all the players? And he sat and paused for 7 seconds, said and then tried to then explain, oh, I'm hesitating because, and then gave a wishy-washy answer where he sort of defended the players, but sort of said, I don't really want to answer for all the players because I'm not them. And I thought that was telling. I thought his pause was more telling than the subsequent answer. If he'd just given the subsequent answer straight away, you'd say maybe fair enough. But for him to pause just adds to the idea that many fans, I assume, are probably seeing with their eyes, we in the press box probably think we're seeing in our eyes as well, that is the full commitment there? Is every player fully engaged between now and the end of the season for Newcastle, whether they think because the season's basically done, whether they think because their future might be elsewhere, a whole host of reasons.
Is it a lack of confidence where you know, absolutely your levels of intensity drop because you're fearful when you're on the ball, you know, you're less sure of what you should be doing, you're less sure of what your teammates are doing. Is it a bit of everything?
Yeah, and so I thought that was telling and indicative of all the focus is on the manager. Understandably, because Newcastle have lost 8 of the last 11 games in the Premier League, they've lost 5 of the last 6 at St James's Park in the league. That is dreadful form by anyone's measure, and any manager at any club with that sort of form would be under pressure, and serious questions would be asked of them. But the players should and are under serious pressure as well, because they're not delivering on the pitch, and that was evident again, because I just thought it was another listless performance and the directionless in many ways, toothless, any sort of negative word you really want to go for. I think most of them were there because it just feels again, you said the phrase last week, that football happens around Newcastle, and that is just what it feels like at the moment.
Yeah, and you know, I know you're writing for The Athletic about that sort of idea of responsibility. I mean, it's fair enough for the head coach to take it afterwards and say it's all on him. It's fair enough for Trippier to come out and say it's all on them, it's all on the players. But like, the one area that you need a team to take responsibility is where they're not. I mean, obviously that's why we're having this conversation in the first place, but in that sense, it's just rinse and repeat. I mean, it may be a different form of rinse and repeat in the sense it's different players. Yes, as you said, they didn't take the lead and then give it away, but it was another defeat. It was another 2-1 defeat, and it was another late goal. So all of those things we've just seen time and time again.
Yeah, and just it's when you watch, I said this after the Palace game, and again, I don't necessarily know what the clear game plan was today. I don't know how Newcastle wanted to attack. Harvey Barnes' first 10 minutes looked quite lively and then was anonymous for the rest of the game. Anthony Elanga was awful when he was on the pitch. There wasn't the only one. The midfield, he started Sandro Tonali as a number 8. I don't think that's ever, very rarely, if ever, worked for Newcastle, where they just wanted Lewis Miley to have more responsibility on the ball, but it didn't work in the first half, the two of them in those separate roles. I thought Jacob Ramsey started pretty well, trying to drive forward, but again, he faded completely by the time he'd been taken off. The fullbacks were terrible in the first half.
Dreadful, yeah.
Didn't contribute at all in the way that they should have done. Asula was anonymous until he actually scored eventually, later on, which we obviously come on to. I don't know what the patterns of play were meant to be. I don't know what the game plan was meant to be. And so that comes back to the manager, but it also comes, there's also the players involved in that. But I just, it just feels like, it doesn't feel like anything is right at the moment out there on the pitch. It just doesn't, whether it's the communication and the direction is there from the head coach and it isn't being carried out, or whether the instructions are there and that's what they're, how they're meant to be playing. And if that was how they were meant to be playing, how they were ever going to score beyond what was basically fortune slash sort of inspiration in the way that they equalised. Beyond that, they had two or three chances and that's it in the entire match at home.
Yeah. And before I unleash you and allow you to get into some granular description, while we stay on the sort of general topics, I think we do have to talk about the atmosphere today. Started off very positively. There were chants, you know, chants for Eddie Howe, as always. And then when Bournemouth took the lead, there was that sort of feeling like an intake of breath. And there was a chance, it was a really good chance for Bournemouth to double their lead when, and I'm going to turn to you now, somebody didn't kick the ball properly.
Evan Nielsen didn't connect.
Didn't fully connect. But it was, it felt like a massive chance. And at that point, that St James's becomes a stadium on a knife edge to me. It really did feel like that. The halftime whistle comes. There were a lot of booing, I would say, and from that moment, it felt really, really delicate. You know, again, without kind of going through absolutely everything that happened in the game, Newcastle come back into it. It was a delayed celebration because of the VAR check. That felt like an important moment. And at the end, I don't think it was that full-on toxicity that it could have been. There weren't the same sort of gestures and barracking that we saw post Sunderland, but there were boos, but it sort of almost felt like acceptance to me. Which,
yeah, it was like deflation.
Deflation.
Not apathy. I think apathy would be too strong because I think people were bothered, but it felt like people were just sort of booing and then almost walking out. And I think a lot of people did leave at that stage. So there were boos, but it wasn't sort of absolutely visceral, but it wasn't so much full on anger. And you noticed that the lap of appreciation was far briefer this time, wasn't it?
They kind of cut corners, I think. I mean, I guess I can understand that. They are fronting up and it's like, why linger when there aren't very many people left anymore? They do it every game. I think they're kind of right to do it, except I suppose when it's happening week in, week out, it's sort of offering people the opportunity to vent. So whether that's good or not, I don't know. Let's go back to the start. There was one thing that I found very interesting about the team selection, and it's, again, this is more of a general point, and I'm not sure what, if any, lessons we can draw from it. It turned out, we found out afterwards, that was Newcastle's youngest starting 11 in the Premier League for 25 years?
21 years.
21 years.
Since 2005.
And it was very noticeable. The thing that I did notice was that every single member of Newcastle's current leadership group were on the bench. Now, that means the good news. Bruno is back. Bruno is back from hamstring and from a bout of the month. But they were all mumps. But they were
the months.
Months, Jesus. Here am I criticising other grown adults for being ineffective. So it was a team sort of lacking leadership in the sense of leadership group. Sandro Tonali was captain.
Which is staggering. I can't remember the exact game and I was trying to search it and I couldn't remember it. But Newcastle have a 5-man leadership group now. They did previously have a 6-man leadership group. I remember one match where I think it was a player went off and in the end Fabian Scher got the armband. And I remember commenting on this podcast saying Newcastle's 7th choice captain ended up wearing the armband. Yeah. Now Tonali is at least Newcastle's 6th choice captain because when Miley got it off Trippier, that was just because he was closest by. It wasn't that he was actually the only player left on the pitch at that stage. But I mean, it is. That in itself is that you've got a 5-man leadership team and not a single one of them was on the pitch.
Yeah. And should point out, there's been a couple of games when, including at Palace, Jacob Murphy was the only member of the leadership a group on the pitch. But it sort of felt like, you know, is this like a passing? Is this like a changing of the guard? Is this a very deliberate strategy? Is it just switching things around? I thought Newcastle were poor in the first half. You've gone through that. I thought players, you know, good players like Hall and Livramento, who you would want to step forward and grasp that responsibility we're talking about, didn't do it. You're not really seeing it in the centre halves. We're not seeing it in midfield. It felt like a quiet team. It felt like a team without drive, without purpose, as you said. And again, with Bruno on the bench, you sort of, you're yearning for somebody. You know, he's not a shouter in the traditional sense. He's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna pick somebody up and throw them against the dressing room wall, but somebody just driving the team forward that was like, I didn't think there was any of that.
No, I didn't think there was any of that. It felt like it's almost a reflection of this Newcastle side in general now at the moment. It's almost like it feels like everyone's waiting for something to happen to them. That there's nobody grasping it, as you say. Bruno, and when he came on the pitch, to an extent of that, I mean, he wasn't full on Bruno, and you wouldn't necessarily expect it because he clearly isn't anywhere near fit. But he will try. I asked how, in the pre-match press conference, about how much of a miss Bruno has been, and almost have we overlooked that. And one thing I found very interesting was he talked about what you get most about Bruno is he demands the ball, he wants the ball, no matter what the situation is, he tries to take that responsibility. We use that word again. And other people, it just feels like they're almost, the responsibility gets passed to somebody else. And clearly when confidence is low, clearly when things aren't working, there's just more and more of that happening on the pitch at the moment. Now, you mentioned the fullbacks. First half, the way the game was, Newcastle were attacking the Leeds' end. Lewis Hall was directly in front of us. And most of the first half, Jason Tindall and Eddie Howe spent shouting at Lewis Hall, telling him where to be. I asked after the game whether Hall was withdrawn due to injury or for tactical reasons, and Howe said it was tactical reasons. And clearly, they didn't like whatever they were seeing, largely, I assume, defensively from him, because that felt like a big call. He has been Newcastle's probably most consistent player throughout most of the season. But defensively, him and Livramento, I thought, really struggled in that first half.
Totally. I mean, when we saw Trippier, so half-time comes around, the substitutes are all on the pitch, they're all warming up, and then Trippier turns back towards the bench and it's obvious that he's going to come on. I was certain that it was going to be Livramento coming off because I just thought he was horrible in that first half. And, you know, if you're talking about sort of body language and listlessness and, you know, not quite being at it, I just thought he was poor. And in some ways, I mean, you have made the point repeatedly that actually Livramento recently has been more effective at left back.
I've always preferred him there.
Yeah. And I think with Trippier then on the pitch, I think, I'm struggling to sort of say this really, bearing in mind the circumstances. I think Trippier came out of the second half with some credit. I think Newcastle sort of marginally improved with the fullbacks set up that way, but it is marginal. And just really disappointing. And you mentioned Anthony Gordon. It's we've made a similar point to this before. It's like when one goalkeeper comes out of the team, you then think, yeah, we should get the other guy back in. Yeah. And Anthony Gordon, okay, I thought, you know, was pretty abysmal at Crystal Palace. Okay, so the official reason for him not being involved is injury, but you're also thinking, okay, is he one of the players who wants away? Is he really demonstrating that he wants to stay? He comes out of the team, and then you think, yeah, this was probably a day that you needed Anthony Gordon, and the other two people don't really take advantage. I mean, if we're, you know, talking about the wingers, then Anthony Elanga, that was back to sort of start middle of the way through the season, Elanga.
There was one moment in the second half where, just before he got hooked actually, where he tried to cross the ball and he basically hit the first man immediately, and the crowd really did respond to that, and it was a very negative response.
Yeah, again, when you were talking about the kind of crowd on a knife edge, I thought that felt like a moment too. And but, you know, just all the way across the pitch, you just want somebody to get a grip, someone to do something, someone to grasp the metal and kind of drive the...
Grasp the nettle, I think, is it?
What did I say?
I think you said grasp the metal, which...
Grasp the metal? Okay. Grasp the metal. I sort of don't think that doesn't work. I mean, do I actually prefer that to grasp the... Why would you grasp the nettle? That's a stupid thing to do.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose it is, yeah. Unless you're wearing gloves. But
unless you're wearing gloves. All right, well, whether it's metal or nettle, it didn't happen.
I don't know.
I'm glad you're finding today funny.
Yeah, well, quite. Just on Livermendo, I mean, we may as well cover it now rather than before going the goals. That Livermendo obviously was forced off eventually with what looked like a thigh injury. He had a lot of strapping and an ice pack over his thighs. He came off at the end of the game. He's had a lot of injuries, so I do feel for him in that regard. But ever since he came back from the last injury, he hasn't exactly been brilliant. But let's hope that that isn't an extended period out.
What did Eddie Howe say about him afterwards?
Well, Howe said that it's a big blow for us and him. He didn't really talk about period of time for that. With Gordon, he didn't rule out the prospect he could be back next week. He said he'd be assessed this week. They don't know for certain, but he'd missed a couple of days of training. But with Livermendo, without giving a time scale, he did sound pretty downbeat about it. So,
talking about the head coach, we have mentioned him, but we should talk about him again. You asked him a question about his own position afterwards as well, didn't you?
He'd been asked a few questions generally about the game and about his comments before the match. But I then went back to him in the pre-match press conference. One thing he said was, he again sort of gave that out of, if I'm not the right man, then I'll walk away. I want what's best for the club. But I believe I'm the right man for the club. I believe I'm the right man to take it forward. So I basically said to him, well, the run of form is 8 defeats and 11 in the Premier League. It's 5 and 6 at St James's Park. Does that create any doubt in your mind that you still have the belief that you can are the one to sort this out and to take Newcastle forward? And this was his response.
Yeah, my belief in myself can't waver, and it's not. I think, you know, that's in every moment. That's in good moments where, you know, I try to stay very level and very calm, where I don't believe the hype one way, it has to work in reverse the other way, where I have to retain a real belief in my work and my staff and what I do. So, yeah, despite what other people may say, that's there. But of course, I'm very aware of those results and they're not good enough.
So, yeah, he says he can't allow that belief to waver. And I don't know whether, could you argue to a certain extent, I was trying to work out after his pre-match press conference where there was a man almost trying to convince himself or whether he does firmly believe that you have to take him at his word for now. But the issue is that on the pitch it isn't working. The fact that it's now been 2 full weeks on the training ground, and he talked about how this had been intense a week as ever of training they've had, and then they produced that again. And that is the concern, is that there was supposed to be this uptick between now and the summer. And he was asked a separate question basically, where it was, oh, you can look at it as you know this idea that you just get through the summer, but there's just 5 games left. There's a month and a half left in the season. That's a long, long time when it feels like this. Newcastle can't just saunter through those 5 games playing like this. Because if this just repeat, if this is rinse and repeat continued, as we've said the last 3 games, then nobody is going to want to see that at the start of next season.
Yeah, I think that's totally, totally fair. I can't argue with that. Right, I know you're desperate, desperate, desperate to do some match reporting here. So, I mean, it wasn't a horrific start to the match, I didn't think. You can counter me and say that there was no creativity, urgency, or much else. It just wasn't horrific. But Bournemouth took the lead, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, they didn't take the lead to the 32nd minute. But no, I don't disagree with your point about the start of the match, but it was also, it just felt very familiar, this idea of what are Newcastle trying to do, what is there. They basically try to get the ball wide. They can't attack through the middle. They don't have the ability to create through the middle, so particularly when Bruno isn't on the pitch. So they just get the ball wide, and then there's like crosses into the box or passes along the floor to nobody, or they just give the ball away. Will Asula, being absolutely anonymous, his teammates not finding him as well. That's not just digging him out. But yeah, Bournemouth, Newcastle had played themselves into trouble a few times leading up to that. They did what they tend to do in these tight matches, as they did in the second half against Palace, where it's basically eventually invite themselves into trouble. Botman had given the ball away a few times. Livermento had repeatedly given it away. The midfielders had given it away. So Newcastle are caught in possession. Eventually, the ball comes out to Ryan on the right, of the right hand side of the box. He just saunters past Lewis Hall, who doesn't get back quickly enough to deal with him. He puts a low cross into the area. Not entirely sure Aaron Ramsdale's positioning is brilliant, but I'd probably have to see it again to say that for certain. But again, just doesn't really convince with saves, in my opinion. And then you have Tavernier runs in and Livermendo sort of loses him and then makes a pretty pathetic attempt to tackle him, and Tavernier sort of bundles it over the line, basically. And yeah, it sucked the life out of St James's. And then, as you said, soon afterwards, Evan Nielsen has a very similar chance where he slides in the back post, and that's when the crowd, that's when they did feel like there was anger, and it was basically as if it could turn quite quickly, but it didn't. And Bournemouth didn't have loads of other chances, I didn't think, in the first half, and even the start of the second half. Newcastle didn't have many of their own accord either until the big moment when Bruno Guimaraes eventually is introduced onto the pitch, which was sort of the moment everyone really had been waiting for, I think, inside the ground, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there had been a chance towards the end of the first half when Hall's free kick, it drops to Alex Scott, yes, doesn't it? And it prompts a good save from the Bournemouth keeper, but really...
But Newcastle didn't have a shot on target in the first
Newcastle
half.
Did not have a shot on target. And yeah, so the second half starts, you hear the crowd go again. There are more Eddie Howe positive chants. There's that Alanga moment, as you mentioned. He gives the ball away, and again, you feel it sort of turning. More substitutions. Murphy comes on. Bruno comes on for Ramsey. So then you're having this sort of injection of leadership. Fans start singing Walter Marder's name, which again feels like this could be a sort of moment. And yeah, the goal comes. I mean, we have that sort of horrible deferred moment because VAR intervenes.
You could argue that if you were going to be positive about VAR for once, you could argue that this was actually a decent intervention.
Yes, I wasn't complaining about VAR. I was about the deferred. I was just, yeah.
Yeah, but deferred. But for once, actually, this was where VAR became important, because the goal wouldn't have been given rightly, but visually it looked like Anasula was offside. The flag went up. He was offside, in an offside position, because it looked like Bruno from inside his own half, just in the D, had played the ball forward through to send Willisula in behind the Bournemouth defence. He was slightly offside, but Bruno immediately goes up to the referee and says, "I didn't play the ball." And it turns out that actually Evan Nielsen running back, and I would argue, and maybe this is placing too much importance onto Bruno, but I do think that almost Bruno's introduction made Bournemouth a bit more reactive and feeling that they needed to make those challenges in those positions, because he had someone who was trying to do that. And so because Bruno was trying to force it, that actually led to the chance. And it's Evan Nielsen's ball, which is played through to Asula, who it doesn't think he's... I don't actually think he thinks he's offside. He turns, runs through on goal, allows Senesi to get back towards him because he doesn't sort his feet quick enough, but then manages to turn inside Senesi. I worried he'd basically cocked it up by that stage, but then he finishes well across the keeper. Second goal in as many games, 3 in his last 4 in the Premier League for Newcastle. Took it well, and that was the equaliser. So yeah, on the pitch, flags raised, and the goal isn't going to be given. But then VAR intervenes and then does show that he wasn't offside, because the ball was played by a Bournemouth player rather than a Newcastle player. And that was when I mentioned the need for sort of luck and sort of inspiration. I'd classify that as sort of Bruno coming on the pitch. Newcastle got that, and you were hoping that then that was going to kick them on.
It felt like a moment, and it felt like an important moment for the team, for Eddie Howe, for everybody. I have to say, as you said it, Asula didn't do very much, but that was he took that goal really well. Ultimately, you know, he showed perseverance. The ball stuck to him and clung to him, and then he finished it well. And you know, from that point, you want that to be a platform again, but once again, it was a trapdoor. Dan Byrne comes on for Livramento, playing left back. There was a chance for Jacob Murphy, which I've noted down. He kind of curls the ball high and wide.
Yeah, there'd been a couple of shots blocked before that in the build up to it, and then he curls it wide. Yeah,
but it was Bournemouth who took the lead again, not Newcastle.
Yeah, but there was also a big chance for Byrne as well. Oh, was that after?
That was right at the end.
That was right at the end. So that was after Bournemouth scored. But yeah, he had a header from a corner, which I think he should have done better with. He was free and he put it over. Howe spoke afterwards about the defending not being good enough again. And he's right that basically Newcastle sort of get caught. And the ball comes in the left-hand side of the box. It's lifted in by Tavernier. And I actually think Evan Nielsen does really well, because he's only about 6 yards out, but there's not much pace on the cross. And rather than try to head it towards goal, he basically wrong-foots Ramsdale and the Newcastle defence by... He heads it back across. Byrne can't get in to head it clear. Botman can't get across either. And he basically heads it back across to Truffaut, who's arriving, and he sort of sticks out a foot and puts it into the roof of the net. And it just felt like Groundhog Day. It just felt like you've been here before, and it just sucked the energy and the life out of the crowd, really, and understandably so, because he didn't ever. I didn't ever truly believe Newcastle were going to get back into it. Burn should have scored that header, but even when 9 minutes went up as the added time, there was no part of me that really thought Newcastle are going to get back into this.
The equaliser, I think it was sort of a moment of release. I think people got a lot of frustration out in the celebration of the goal, both celebrations of the goal, I suppose, the first time it happened, and then the VAR allowing it. You saw, you know, Jason Tindall was clenching his fists before it had been given, you know, the second time, and it was felt like a big moment. So I think that sort of took a fair bit of the anger out of the crowd. I think if it had gone 2-0 to Bournemouth, I think it would have gone toxic. It didn't. And, you know, as we say, by the end, it almost felt apathetic. That's not maybe quite the right word, maybe sort of more resigned. But here we are again. And next up, it's Arsenal on Saturday evening. It's going to feel like another long week. Newcastle haven't managed to change the narrative. And yeah, we'll have to pick the bones out of it again in midweek, won't we?
We will do, yeah. I just want to say one thing about, I've seen a bit of discourse that Newcastle are only, as things stand, I mean, Spurs are drawing against Brighton, but as things stand, Newcastle are only 11 points above the relegation zone, that they could get dragged into a relegation battle. Now, I am the most pessimistic person in the world, but none of the teams below Newcastle, there's not going to be four teams below Newcastle who are going to get to 42 points or above. So even if Newcastle don't pick up a point between now and the end of the season, I am adamant Newcastle will not be relegated. So it may get uncomfortable in that Newcastle are going to be getting dragged closer to it. Leeds United winning again today are only 3 points behind. But Newcastle are not going to be in a relegation battle. As dreadful as their form is, and as dreadful as their position is, that they are 14th in the Premier League and could finish feasibly lower, they're not going to get dragged into a relegation battle.
I take that on board. What I will say to you is that Newcastle are playing in relegation form.
Yes.
Newcastle are in relegation.
Yes, but they have enough points on the board, so totally. They're not going to be relegated.
No, I...
But the concern is if that continues at next season and then you get someone like Spurs who were in that sort of form the second half of last season and then it's continued in this year and they may well get relegated. That is the concern. It's a long-term trend. But for this season, Newcastle are not going to get relegated, so...
I take that as a great comfort whilst they're playing in absolutely relegation form. Right, we should leave it there. We will be back with you in midweek. We will have extra time offerings for you as well. Chris did a great podcast with Taylor this week, which featured an extended interview with Peter Ramage, Newcastle United's assistant loan manager. Really good listen. Thank you to everybody who subscribes and listens. Thank you to everybody who has managed to sit through this wallowing in despair. We will do it all again in midweek. Thanks a lot.